Okay. Oh, hey, I'm Tracy. I'm an alcoholic addict. Thanks for asking me to share this morning. It will not take me an hour. My life is not that interesting, in my opinion, anyway, that it'll take an hour to lay it all out. I started using getting drunk when I was when a little guy. I was like 11 years old when I started drinking, and I was sneaking alcohol. I was sneaking alcohol from my dad. Was when I was started sampling, if you will. Didn't like the taste of it from the very beginning. Didn't like, but I did like how I felt. Ultimately, that's how I, I kind of knew right there that that's that I was going down the path, but. I had a good life. I didn't have the type of life. I hear a lot of people say, "Oh, my life was, my growing up was stressful and harsh." But I had a good family. I was adopted when I was 5, or excuse me, 3 years old, and I did meet my birth mother, which I'll get to later. But I was adopted when I was 3 years old. She had me very young, and at that time in the 60s, you didn't keep a child, and she was that young, and you didn't, you just were kind of hidden away, and your child was put up for adoption. So I spent some early years as a baby in a foster home. And I didn't have, I later learned that I didn't have a lot of interaction as a baby in the formal years. I think part of that is. I can attribute part of that to my thinking issues and my need to constantly be alone. Like I love being isolated, and I'm perfectly okay. I need it, I don't know, maybe it's part of my introversion, but I've read stuff about when babies aren't held and coddled and in the early years, so but anyway. So, My family, my mother and father, my father was in the army, and they traveled around. They lived in Germany and all that. I wasn't with them then, but they liked to entertain, so they would always have house parties, and they were very close to the neighborhood, and so they always had friends over, and we always had the Christmas at our house, and so they always had alcohol, and I always see everybody having fun, and they always had these little drinks, little glasses, orange juice glasses, we call them here, but little glasses with alcohol, and the more those went, the more those came out, the more laughter there was, and I always wondered what is in those glasses, what are they drinking? I want some of that. I want to laugh. So, I would sneak, during the parties. I would, and not at the beginning of the party, mind you, but as it got going and everybody started to get drunk, and I was supposed to be in bed, mind you, because I'm a kid, and there's no way you could sleep in a house like that. So anyway, I would sneak around and take sips from those glasses, that's how I started drinking. And so my dad kept a lot of alcohol in the house. He had actually had a bar in his in the basement of our house, and he was an army veteran, so he would go down to the PX and he would get like a case of alcohol to keep his bar stocked, and so that's when I started to sneak from his bottles after, and I would just take a little bit off. I didn't want to take a lot, I didn't want to overdo it, so I'd take a little bit off the top and each one, and that's how I got going. And the whole idea of the sneaking and that is just something that's been a one of my character defects, or if you will. I like to call it character defaults, but just even after I've gotten sober, I've noticed that I want to not hit things head on. I want to be sneaky about it. I fear feedback from people. I fear, blowback from people, so I avoid confrontation. So I sneak things. So anyway, moving on into my life, it was, I had met up with some friends around the neighborhood. You know, we always have friends and we always find each other. I think alcoholics and addicts always find each other. And I don't know what that is, but so I hooked up with my buddies in the neighborhood, and I had some friends whose brothers would get us alcohol and that. And I always felt, one to back up a little bit, I always felt as a young person like inadequate and ashamed and very low self-esteem. You know, just always felt like an outsider, you know, all the time. I don't know what that was. It was in my head. I don't think that it was that way, but it was in my head that I was an outsider and very awkward, and I felt like I was a monster or something, like, ooh, I'm ugly, you know. So it was just self-esteem, basically. So anyway, going back to the friends, so we would get alcohol. My friend's brother was old enough to get us alcohol, and he would get us beer. So we'd get these big 40-ounce bottles of beer, you know. We call them 40-ouncers. And this was malt liquor, you know, Schlitz malt liquor, bull. And Colt 45, that was the thing here in the U.S. Billy D. Williams did commercials for Colt 45. You know, works every time. That was the catchphrase, and it did work every time, you know, because I can hardly remember any of those times we got those giant bottles of beer. We would each get one. It'd be four or five of us, and we each have one, and we'd have side stuff too, you know, drugs too. It wasn't just always alcohol. But when I drank that stuff, I felt like all of that fear and all of that anxiety and all of that, you know, feeling outside went away. You know, I finally felt comfortable. You know, I couldn't just do that on my own. I had to have the beer and the weed and the alcohol to make me feel comfortable. You know, early on, it was my crutch, you know. And the thing about it was, you know, when I was younger, and all of us can identify with this, maybe when we're kids and we drink, you know, I can bounce back from that pretty easy. I mean, we drank a lot. We drank alcohol and weed, and we'd, you know, tie one on and then get up the next day and go to school, you know, because my body could take it. My body could throw it off, you know. And that went on for a lot of years, and the progression of it. And we all know the progression of alcohol. It's going to happen to you. It's not sustainable to continue to do that, no matter, you know, what. And as I went on, more things happened, more alcohol was added. More fear, more shame, more guilt. You know, I was never good with girls. I was very shy and very, like I said, introverted. And relationships were just, I was just, it didn't happen. I just wasn't, if there was a person that I liked, girl that I liked, I was too afraid to go up to her and say anything, you know what I mean? Which made me feel worse, which made me use more alcohol and more drugs, you know, and rinse and repeat. You know, that was my life, basically, was running away from my emotions and running away from people and running away from responsibilities and alcohol. I run to alcohol and run to drugs, you know. I got okay grades in school. I wasn't, you know, a failure, but I wasn't living up to my full potential, you know, and because of the drugs and the alcohol. But I was okay with that. I was okay just skating by. And that's how I got through life, was just skating by. As long as I could get high and drinking everything and skate by, I get straight D's. I'm like, and you know, my parents were like, you got to get your grades up. And I'm like, why? I passed, you know, what's the matter? Get off my back, you know, you know. And I went into adulthood that same way, with that same attitude. As long as I get by, leave me alone. Let me get my alcohol, let me get my drugs, and leave me alone. So I ended up going to art school. That's where I went to school. I was always good at drawing, even drunk or high. I could always draw, you know. And there was a program in my high school that led me to an art school. I went to Art Institute of Pittsburgh here in the US, and because I thought, you know, I would see these famous artists like Van Gogh and you know, all these famous artists, they were all crazy and kooky. And so I thought, yeah, I can live with them. You know, those guys are drunks and nuts and, you know, but they made these masterpieces, you know. And so I'm okay, you know, as long as I can draw and paint, you know, I'll be all right. So I went to this art school in Pittsburgh, and it was a more of a commercial art thing. So I would work for ad agencies and that kind of thing. And I really did like it, you know. But you know, wherever you go, there you are. You know, of course, I took alcoholism and I took addiction with me, and I had to have it, you know, and it helped me shake off those fears and shake off that anxiety, and fit in. You know, I could talk to people. You know, I could, you know, to come up with the great ideas. You know, I thought they were anyway. And again, just skate by, just get by. You know, but I was good enough at art and drawing and design that I got better grades in school. But I still, now that I look back, didn't live up to my full potential there. You know, I could have done so much better. I had a lot of resentment towards myself about that, you know, which I've dealt with. But I look back and think, wow, where could I have been, you know? But that's okay. I'm doing good today, and I'm doing good now, and that's what really matters. I try not to harp on the past and what I didn't do, because that's useless, you know. It's all about living in the now. And so anyway, I went through school, and I took alcohol, and it was college, so of course there's drinking in college and all kinds of crap in college. And you know, grain alcohol was the order of the day. You know, and parties, parties, parties. You know, we just partied like crazy there. And I lived away from home for the first time, and lived in a dorm, and I had a roommate, and I never felt comfortable having a roommate. You know, it drove me insane having somebody in the room with me all the time. And this is a dorm room, so this is like a closet, you know. And I just had to continue. I drank more and more and more to deal with that anxiety of that, you know. I stayed out of that room as often as possible, you know. I like only came in there to sleep, you know. And it was rough. It was rough mentally, you know, mentally, not physically, obviously. I had a roof over my head, and I had college, and you know, so I was, because I was a foster child, I was a ward of the state, basically, or excuse me, the county. And my foster parents never legally adopted me, which was fine. You know, to me, I felt like a family member. They never treated me any different. They were fantastic. And because I was a ward of the county, I would get loans. They paid for my college, you know. But I had to take out some loans. I had to cover the rest of it. And so because of that, I would get these refund checks when I was in college. And I'm like, and I mean, they were like, you know, $1,000. You give a teenage kid $1,000 who's an alcoholic and an addict, and it's like cha-ching, you know, guess what we're doing tonight? You know, we're getting fucked up. That was what we said. And we did, you know. And I didn't understand. I'm like, wow, refund. What I should have done if I were responsible was put that in a bank and save it until after, you know, start to pay back my loans. But I wasn't doing that. So I get out of college, and you know, all of these bills start coming due. And I'm like, oh my God, what is all of these bills? And I had to, you know, I didn't go into bankruptcy. I ended up going to a credit counseling place to help pay down my school loans, and they would just take money out of my paycheck. Luckily, I had a little piece of a job, so I barely got any money. But you know, anyway, so college was, I graduated from college again. Just get by, just get by. Don't top a class. I don't want to be up there. No. just get by. I'm down here. Just, I want to be small and leave me alone. And so that's what I did, you know, and I graduated. And so I thought, me being who I am and in my own head, I'm a legend in my own mind. I'm going to graduate from college and I'm going to go to the biggest ad agency in downtown Cleveland and get a job, right? Because that's what they told me in the commercial, you know, that advertised my school. Draw Tippy and you'll be a millionaire, you know. So the college would help, would set you up with interviews. So they set me up with this interview at this agency, and I went down there and I'm showing this guy my stuff from college. And he's like, "You're not ready yet," you know. He was being honest with me. He wasn't being mean, now that I think back. He was like, "You're not ready yet. And when you are, you know, just keep at it." That's what he told me. Keep at it, you know, and come back and see me, you know. But I heard, "You suck. My God, how did you get in here? I'm calling security." You know, that's what my magic magnifying mind would hear, you know. Low self-esteem was still in there. Anxiety was still in there. I wasn't dealing with any of these issues. I was covering it all up with alcohol and drugs. He probably could smell alcohol on me now that I'm thinking about it, because I'm sure I was still drinking heavily at that time. So I went home with my tail between my legs and got drunk, of course. And, you know, I would just get jobs in warehouses and, you know, stuff like that. And I mean, they were good jobs for me, I guess, a teen getting out of college, right? But to me, in my head, I was, you know, a piece of garbage, you know. But I kept trying to get these art jobs, and I would get, you know, every now and then I would get a little side job to do something for a family member or something. Nothing really big, and kept practicing and kept going forward. And eventually I did get a job at a company for this place to design stained glass windows. You know, that was like my first real design job. And the company, it was a franchise thing. It wasn't like they didn't do real stained glass windows. They did this like stained glass overlay thing. It was like some fake thing. I was happy. I was doing design finally. You know, my parents weren't happy. Like, they thought it was a waste of time for me to try to draw for a living. But you know what? My dad wanted me to join the army, and I'm like, I ain't doing that shit. That requires too much effort. And, you know, I'm not about effort. You know, that's how I came in this program. When I came in the program, I didn't want to put forth effort. You know, I did that half-ass for a long time. Anyway, first design job, and I'm, you know, I was happy, you know. And so that was the start of my career as a designer. And that place eventually went out of business, and I moved on to a printing company, a small place. And that company went under because the owner was embezzling the money. And I always seem to find alcoholic companies too. How did that work? You know, no matter what, alcoholism and disorder was in my path. You know, we're just like magnets to each other. So after that company went under, I had got another job at a printing company. But this printing company was, they did blueprints for construction. Like, so they reproduced just giant sheets, and they did printing and graphics, and that's how I got in there. That was my first deal with the computer. Again, still drinking, still getting high, still just doing enough. I never wanted to do extra for anybody. I never wanted to do extra for myself. You know, I just wanted to get by. I just wanted to be small and drink and get high and leave me alone. And that's what I did. And the company I'm working for now, the president of this company was a raging alcoholic. And they had a bar. This company had four floors. It was a small building. And they had a bar on the fourth floor where they would schmooze clients. And that was wonderful. How can I work at a company that has a bar? You know, heaven. And this place was totally dysfunctional. It was crazy that it lasted as long as it did. this lady would go out, this lady with the president would go out and meet people at bars, and she would, the one time she brought in a kid, the son of a lady she met at a bar, who must have been crying about how her son wasn't doing well. So I come to work in the morning, and this kid is sitting in my chair by my computer, and he's high from the night before, and I'm high from the night before, and I'm supposed to show him the ropes. What? You know what I mean? It was like, and I hate people being around me. So it was, it was just total dysfunction. It was my life. And so that was the place where I finally, I was getting so high and so drunk, and this is where crack came into my story. And crack cocaine was during that whole epidemic in the world, just took me down. It really did. It was, this is where I met my now wife too, and she was there. She was one of the managers of the department, and they even this place, who was totally dysfunctional, it had a bar on the fourth floor and was run by a raging alcoholic. They told me, "You need to get some help." I'm like, "I need to get some help, you know?" So I had to go. They sent me to treatment. They're like, "You got to get some help." It was the law. They couldn't fire me. They had to offer me to get help. And so that was my first run-in with treatment and intensive outpatient. And again, just half-ass. I went just to get people off my back, and oh, I'm doing everything. Oh, I'll say your little steps and all of that. You know what I mean? And I went through the process, and I hemmed and hawed and did what I had to do. Again, I'm very much a people pleaser, and that's another character default. I learned to say what you want me to say to get you off my back. And no integrity there. You know what I mean? I'll just lie to your face, and it's horrible. It's a horrible way to live. It really is. Thank goodness for this program. It's taught me and helped me get out of that. It's still in there. My alcoholic tendencies are still in there, obviously, but I have a whole toolbox of defenses to help me with that now. And so this company, I went to treatment, and I finally started to. Alcohol, AA, let me back up. So when I went through this place, and I was still just getting by and saying what you needed me to say, but what happened was they introduced me to AA, and AA ruined my drinking, ruined my getting high by giving me awareness. Okay, once you have awareness that you're doing something, something's wrong here, something's, and I always kind of knew. I just kind of knew something was up, but I thought it was outside of me. I thought it was you guys. I thought it was my work. I thought it was my mother and father. I thought it was, these people screaming at me, wanting me to stop. But when AA introduced me to the fact that I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict, and then I would go back out, relapse, whatever. I wouldn't even call it a relapse because I never was really sober. I just kind of stopped a little bit. Then that fucks up your drinking. It really does. Once you have that awareness that you have a disease, and you don't have to live that way, so that's where I was. And there's a whole cycle of that going in and out, and relapse, and then staying a little bit sober and going back out. And the company that I was working for, eventually I got another job at a different company who was one of our clients, which is how I got into the business I'm in now, which is I design point of purchase displays for retail. So I do retail spaces and that kind of thing. And I was always good enough to get another job, and I was always good enough to get by, which is, my MO. And so before that, just at the tail end of this last company, I really started to go to AA a lot, and I got my first sponsor, and my family was Let me back up. Right before I left that company, my family did an intervention on me, and they dropped me off. They had to fool me into this intervention. My sister and father put me in the car and told me, "Hey, we're going for a ride." And I'm like, "Okay, because I'm hungover and you know how it is." And so I'm like, "Oh, we're going to dinner or something." So we're going for a ride. We go to this place in Cleveland, and it's called Stella Maris Treatment Center, and they go in, and we go in, and we're like looking around, and we're touring this place, and I'm like, "What the hell is this place?" And they're talking to my sister and brother, or father, and my sister and father head for the door to get back in the car, and I'm walking with them, and they're like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "What do you mean? We're going home." They're like, "Well, we're going home. You're not going home." And I'm like, "What?" It was that bad. They had to fool me into going into treatment. And that was intensive outpatient, or excuse me, that was a treatment place, And so I stayed there for, I can't even remember how long, and the same old stuff. That was intense enough to get me to really start taking a look at myself and, start maybe thinking I gotta stop this, This is just getting crazy, and people are tricking me into getting into treatment, and it was insane. And so I get out of there, and I'm living back at my parents, and I'm supposed to go to AA meetings, and I start going to AA, and I got my first sponsor, and he was a big book thumper and poke you in the chest type of guy, and one of my first outside of their AA meetings, it was a lead, and I stood up and I was going to comment on the lead. And at this time, he was very, oh my goodness, it was bad. He says to me, "Look here, you don't say nothing. You're too new. You don't know what you're doing. You just sit down and listen." So I left that meeting, and this was July of 91. I left that meeting, and I said, "Fuck you." I said, "I'm going to show you that this shit don't work. I'm going to show you this AA stuff is bullshit. I'm going to do all of it." This is how fucking crazy I was. "I'm going to do all your little AA stuff and show you that it doesn't work." And that was when I got sober, because if you put yourself into it, and if you actually do some of these steps and work and read the book and call people and talk to your sponsor and go to meetings, meetings, and meetings, like they said, it'll get you. It'll work. It actually does work, So, because me, Mr. Half-Ass do stuff, I'm half-ass doing AA, and it was working, and I started to get some results, Then I'm embarrassed because it actually did what he said, and the shit's working. So I thought, what the hell? I really do need to stop all of this stuff. And okay, I'll do your little AA. So I'm doing AA, and it's working. What can I say? And it started to get better. I started to do better at work, and my girlfriend and I are doing good together, and I'm getting a little money in my pocket, and it's like, wow, this is pretty cool. This was all in person meetings, and of course at that time, and I got started to get friends in the program. It was scary, don't get me wrong, it was kind of scary. I never really was dealing with my inside issues. At the time, mental health was not a, it was more, it had the stigma attached to it, so I never could, deal with that. At the time, I was a believer, and I did everything. Like I said, I prayed. I would pray every day, and I would, ask my higher power, which was God, to help me. And I still felt, even though I was sober, I still felt on the outside. I still felt not a part of. I still felt awkward. I still felt anxiety and depression. And it took me a lot of years to get to a point where I got to finally talk to a psychologist and a psychiatrist about this stuff. And it was still frowned upon, you know what I mean? And with the old timers, as I call them, because they were fundamentalists, and you just need to pray more, I'm okay, I'll pray more. Like, do I need to push my knees into the ground harder? What am I doing wrong here? You know what I mean? What, I don't get it. Do I need to put my neck back higher when I'm, I don't know, whatever. So anyway, time went on and I started to investigate this God thing, and I'm like, what is with this God thing? I'm not feeling it. I'm not doing everything you say. So I started to look into this whole God thing, and I started to come across guys like Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett, and I started to come to these agnostic. First, I was agnostic. I just slowly backed away from the whole. It just started to unravel, if you will. The more I looked into it, then I started to read the Bible. Because I had never read the Bible to that point. I started to read the Bible and I'm like, this is crazy. Why was I so afraid of it? I was afraid of it for a long time. And I'm like, why am I afraid of this? Talking donkeys and snakes? What the hell? So anyway, I don't want to get into all that here because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we talk about that in fellowship parts. But anyway, so I started to back away from the whole idea of there being an invisible man in the sky somewhere. Who was, looking out for me and helping me with my life. And mind you, I'm staying sober all this time. And I got to a point where I slowly backed away from all of that. And I thought, man, all of this stuff that I've been doing has been me working it. This has been me writing down my character defects and doing the inventories. And this has been me doing my journaling and calling my sponsor and helping out in the meeting. This has been me, moving my feet, as my sponsor says. You got to move your feet in this fellowship. You can sit around and you can stay on the outsides, but you got to get in the middle of the bed, as they say. You really do. Getting active in AA and the program, even on Zoom, is the way to go. It keeps you involved, and it makes you feel better. It makes me feel better when I help out. I love to laugh and I love fellowship. You guys are my higher power. All you guys, people all over the world now, thanks to Zoom and that. It's a pretty amazing. And we laugh. I like really have good laughter. And when I was drinking and I laughed, it was like I was just trying to make you laugh so I could. When you're laughing, I'm gonna drink your drink or steal your weed or something. You know what I mean? Because I'm sneaking. I'm still sneaking. AA has changed my life and saved my life in more ways than one. I have addiction and I go to other 12-step groups for other issues, but at the core of it is always AA. It's always 12-step based. And I always know if I got a problem with something, which is pretty cool, I'm like, okay, I can go to, Silver Spoon Anonymous. I got all these damn silver spoons and I'm addicted to silver spoons and it's getting out of hand. And now I got to go to Silver Spoon Anonymous and powerless over spoons, and my life has become unmanageable. I know what I got to do. I got to start. I got to go to meetings. I got to work some steps. I got to look at my character defaults, character defects. As my friend Marsha always says, I got to get my head out of my ass. And I'm going to get that on a shirt, by the way. That's going to be my next shirt design. And I got to talk to some people, and I got to share the crazies, speak to the crazies, because I have them. I know I have them. And I love when I hear somebody else say, me too, oh, you felt that way. So did I, maybe we don't have an answer at that moment, but just that camaraderie of me too is what I love about this fellowship. I think I'm going to shut the heck up and, I said something maybe to help somebody. I don't know if I did or not. If not, at least you got up in the morning and listened to me ramble about something. Thank you, Malaya, for asking me. Keep coming back no matter what. Get your head out of your ass. Keep your head out of your ass because, it just stinks up there. So you don't want to be up there. With that, I'll pass.